better listen very carefully.
A good martial artist does not become tense, but ready.
Essentially, at this point, the fight is over.
So you pretty much flow with the goal.
Who is worthy to be trusted with the secret to limitless power?
I'm ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's show is brought to you by Parry Athletics, the best pair of training shorts in the game. They do rashies, they do shirts, but what I love is they have shorts for you to roll in as well as shorts for you to chill in. I love them because they're so multi-purpose and they look awesome. Now, you can get your hands on these and you get 20% off with the code BULLETPROOF20 at checkout. Get yours today. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Bulletproof for BJJ podcast. Does your gym have a mat enforcer? Are you the mat enforcer? Is this a necessary part of jiu-jitsu culture? Or is this an old school thing that maybe is not so good? I wanted to talk about it because it's something that I was looking everywhere on the internet. Not many people talked about this, but we all know that it exists.
Absolutely. More and so in some gyms than others.
Yeah, definitely.
Big thing for us coming up.
Definitely. I think there was always a designated person, usually a brown belt or like an...
Or a purple.
Or a purple, like just ultra tough, usually strong. Not always big, but tough as fuck. And they were there really...
Up for a scrap.
They were up for the scrap, but they were also there to kind of protect the tribe a little bit. I think it was one of those things that like sometimes, no, hear me. The reason why I say this is I've seen this more recently that you get a new black belt coming in and they're just there to test the gym out, but they may not be so merciful with everyone on the mat. It's not their gym. They don't care. Sometimes you need almost like a bouncer-esque person to come through and like subdue the new rowdy person or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You know, like you kind of need a gym.
Well, that was the thinking, right? Put it on them and that'll simmer them down a bit.
Not necessarily, but yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem with it is in to an extent.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like I have seen a few, I've got a couple good tales around enforcerism, but I guess my question for us to discuss today is it good? Do we actually need it? Like if your gym culture is pretty sorted, do you need some big staunch to like bash people?
Yeah, it's a good question because, you know, I think a lot of this came from early days jiu-jitsu where it was very territorial.
Yes.
Right? So it's like you don't train at other gyms. This is our gym. Anyone from another gym that comes here is immediately, we're suspicious of them.
Yeah.
That's kind of what's implied.
Yep.
And to that point, then it was like, all right, so we're suspicious of them. So usually maybe let's put them up against the enforcer or, first kind of thing. But also I think there's another sort of inherent belief with this part of the culture, which is that if, say, you've got a visitor that comes in and they've gone real hard against like lower students,
yeah,
lower belt students, then the belief is that, well, in order to teach that person that that's not the right thing to do, you need to beat them up.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I don't want my child to be violent, so I beat them. Do you know what I mean?
Sort of. Or do I...
Whereas...
I teach my children to not be a bully by bashing that other kid.
Exactly. Yeah.
By disciplining the bully.
Watch me beat the shit out of this bully. Kid, yeah.
So you know not to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit... There's an irony in there.
Yeah, so in one way, you're like, okay, there's a rationale there. It makes sense. And definitely, if you've come into a place and maybe you're going a bit hard and you're a bit oblivious, and then someone goes, hey, let's roll, and they bring that energy where they're like, I'm going to teach you a lesson right now. And I know I've copped this before.
Sure.
And then they beat you up, and yep, you're like... yeah, okay. I need to chill out a bit, right?
Dial down a little bit.
Yeah, but it also kind of...
It's not...
Bolsters your feeling of like, I got to be tough.
I'm here to fight.
Toughness. Or yeah, like toughness is what's valued. And one day I'll be the mad enforcer too kind of thing.
Maybe.
Versus say the coach just going up to the new person going, hey man, I just watched you roll. You went a little bit hard with so-and-so. Would you mind just simmering back? That's actually a way more efficient place to deliver the lesson.
Yeah, but I...
But that's not as fun.
I agree. No, not
I
even.
Fucking love no. A good mad enforcer story.
No. I think no.
I'm not saying we should get rid of it.
No, but I actually think that
don't
some
beat
people,
your children.
So, yeah, I'm not about the beating of children. But you know, anyway, what I was going to say, relevant to what you're saying, is I think sometimes, not always, sometimes people coming through who are visiting the gym. Generally, most people are respectful, but some people don't give a shit, and they're not going to respond to you being like, "Hey, man, could you dial down?" You you know, sometimes you need somebody to kind of, you need at least.
Maybe. I don't know, though. It'd be pretty, I'm just, like, for sure, there's always going to be people. But for a coach to go up to someone and say, hey, man, can I just tell you something? You know, like, and that's being protective of the flock. I would find it, I think it'd be hard to imagine someone that wouldn't be like, oh, shit, the coach just told me to fucking pull my head in.
No, some people fuckwits. Like,
absolutely. But then you could say, hey, bro, you're done for today.
That's a stronger move, and I think some coaches are maybe more hesitant to do that.
Well, it's super confrontational, right?
It is.
But there's a fucking thing. Then you just outsource the confrontation to your students.
Yeah.
And that's like, and that's really kind of irresponsible to a, like, unless you've got an enforcer, you're like, JT's going to take care of it. Hey, JT, you're up with this guy next.
Yeah. And look, I've been in that role before, and I've seen that role before. And you'd mentioned before, Joey, that maybe someone had... your old coach had thought of you, like...
I was the enforcer, definitely, a couple of times.
Go put smash on that guy.
I told... There was a time a visiting purple belt came in, had a bad attitude.
Very rough, yeah.
And coach was like...
Sorted out.
Yeah. And I think I was like, there's a new guy, like, getting changed. And coach was like, yeah, he's visiting. And I was like, oh, does he seem cool? And he's like, nah. He's like, you roll with him.
Oh.
And I was like, oh. And it was the most hectic fucking roll. It was so full on.
Yeah.
And I got the better of him. I remember, you know, took him down, counted his takedown and fucking huge takedown and then whatever. Probably just like cross-faced him for 5 minutes. And but I was like, I don't need this shit.
No.
I'm not looking for this on a fucking Thursday night.
It's stressful. And look, I was witness to Matt enforcerism, you might say, at the first gym because there was a lot of really tough brown belts. And anyone new who came in who's trying to test or whatever. They're like, all right, we don't care what belt you are. Like, you're going to go with Big Paulie or you're going to go with... And the funny thing was, actually, the Big Mick, when I was at Peter DeBean, he was, like, untouchable because of how big and how strong he was. But he was actually very gentle. He would
I remember seeing Big Mick and, from the previous episode, Shah Khan at competitions.
Yeah.
And looking at these two fucking specimens and being like... Is this what it's like at black belt?
At heavyweight?
Like, these guys were just...
Colossal.
Like 6.5 foot and, like, jacked, like chiseled out of marble. And you're like, oh, my God, like, I can't wait to be a black belt. Shit.
I was like, I never want to be a black belt. But the thing about Mick was he was actually very... He was very... Like, you couldn't spaz on him. He was just so slow and he would just smush you very slowly. Like, no one could really flex on Mick. There wasn't too many people who had that size or skill set. The thing about Mick was he wasn't the mat enforcer. It was the mean ass. It was Wardy. Shout out Wardy. It was Paulie that, like, these kind of more middle heavyweight, like medium heavy guys who were just mean as fuck brown belts. Like, oh, yeah, you want to test, bro? All right. And they just had every mean trick to, like, just bend you inside out, you know? And that they were actually quite proud of being like, yeah, coach, send this guy our way. We'll fucking rinse this guy, you know? But I have actually a famous untold story. Like, when I say the most famous story you've never heard of, two very famous people going at it, which you haven't heard of. So, the last time I was at Alliance back in 2014, Carvalho, what's his name? Verdum. Verdum came and trained jiu-jitsu at Alliance Sao Paulo. And he's a fucking troll. He was just making fun of dudes. He was just, because he's so big, he's an ADCC champion, right? He's actually very flexible for a big guy. He'd put you in rubber guard, crank your shoulder, but he was like making fun of high-level black belts in roles and his brother or his...
Like dominating them.
His cousin. And he's like, how should I submit this guy? Like, very disrespectful. And like, it's a respectful place. You can have hard roles, but you're not talking during a role.
Yeah.
But because he had a degree of celebrity and people were like, and he's a huge unit. He's a huge unit. People were like a little bit, like, fuck, how do we deal with him? Because he's eccentric. A lot of people don't like him because he is weird. He would just start laughing. Right? No one said anything. He would just start laughing like someone told a joke. And he was mocking one of the top-level heavyweight black belts there and got the better of the role of this guy and hurt this guy's shoulder. And he's like, fuck. So my boy Tarsus Humphreys came through. Your man. Now, what a lot of people don't know about Tarsus Humphreys, he went from white belt to black belt under Fabio Gurgel. He's the only dude out of that big circuit of people. Marcelo came, I I think at Purple. Cobrinha came at Brown. Like, none of them are Alliance OGs.
Right.
Except for Tarsus. And Tarsus is about our size, but 105 kilos, jacked, and ferocious. Like, one of the most ferocious competitors I've ever met. He decided, nah, fuck you, Verdum. I'm coming for you, man. And he came, like, world championship level, like, slap hands, no niceties, like, bah, bah, judo, bah, bah, bah. And Verdum's like, fucking, you're a rude cunt. Like, what are you doing to me? And I was watching this, like, oh. And, like, they were to the side, right? So it was, like, groups of four. And so it was the heavyweight. So fucking Leo Lau, he you know, he beat Bushesha back in the day, Tarsus, and I can't remember what other heavyweight going with Verdum. And it was fucking war. And Tarsus was visually angered. You could see just, and Verdum's like, kind of like trying to play it off, like, oh, you need to fucking settle down, cunt. Like, you know who I am. And Tarsus is like, nah, bro, this is my fucking mat. Boom, boom. Took him down, like, big takedown. And Verdum's like, oh, I'll play some guard. And Tarsus jumped on a knee bar. Now, Tarsus is actually quite famous for wrecking people's knees with, like, a side knee bar. Mm. He doesn't sit evenly to the kneecap. He sits on the side and he fucking cranks. And he just, like, it was like a flying armbar, but on the knee. And just fucking cranked the, like, Chai Rotolo, fucking bend your knee inside out. But, and Verdum's like, aah! And everyone was like, whoa, what went down? And then Tarsus just jumped up, like, gi open, you know, big man chest. And Verdum's like, fuck. Gales. Yeah, yeah, I'll bring it there. Like, and Verdum's like, fuck you. And he's like, cousin or brother, whoever his friend, came over, like, how dare you try and hurt the champ? Because I think at this time he was UFC champion or was previously just
right.
UFC heavyweight champion. And there was almost a fight. And Tarsus was like, well, fuck you, like, come on then, like, let's fuck, like,
wow.
And everyone's like, oh no, ooh. But everybody on the floor was like, that's what you get, yeah, man. You want to come in here and flex on us, bro? Like, we got some fearless dudes in here and you need to respect what's going on in here. Like, it was powerful, man. And I just was like, Tarsus Humphreys, my guy. Like, everybody felt that because I think everyone felt like they had to cower to the celebrity of Fabricio Verdum.
Yeah.
And Tarsus is like, I don't give a fuck.
And you have that, like, when you train at that academy, that's like, there's a collective pride.
Mm.
This is our academy. This place is tough.
Yeah.
My training partners are very good. You know, we have, like, I think we all have that.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, when someone comes in and does that, it's a indignation on your academy.
Yeah. How dare you come to this hallowed place and show no respect, like.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, respect is given and taken, but he was being really rude and he's kind of famous for being rude. And Tarsus wasn't having it. So that was a moment where I was thankful for the Matt enforcerism of Tarsus Humphrey. Shout out. You're my guy forever.
That's why I got a tattoo of you on my butt.
he doesn't know that.
But yeah, and in that scenario, you need someone, right?
Yeah, and look, that's obviously a lot of ego and there's lots of stuff in that. But that's like, if you're a world champion in jiu-jitsu, I guess there's levels to the game, right? They're both world champions in their own respects and different things. But I believe that, you know, ideally you would have a culture in a gym where if someone is going too hard, you can be like, bro, please respect that these people are not on your level and therefore don't be mean. Like, roll them to their level.
Yeah.
And if someone's on your level, you know, match and mirror, that's fine.
Yeah. I would think, like, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, times when when you've rolled with, say, world-class people, you think about, like, say, when Levi Jones-Lee returns up at the gym or something.
But he's nice.
He absolutely
Levi
is.
Levi kicks your ass.
But it's also received differently these days where it's like, it's not just a who's that person on the mat. Oh, it turns out that guy's in the UFC. It's now that it's more established and we know people, it's like, oh, Levi's coming in tonight. And so it's like, oh, what can we learn from them?
Yeah.
It's a different context versus person shows up and like, I'm going in because this is a battleground. Right. So now it's a training room.
Yeah.
And you can share some, if you're really good.
Yeah.
You don't even need to flex it.
Yeah.
Come and teach some shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Man, last time I rolled Levi was no gi at Adams.
You see who he's fighting?
Yeah. Yeah. Yonatas,
bro. Yeah. That's a huge no gi match.
Great match.
Yonatas is a motherfucker.
But
I haven't seen, I mean, I know, we know Levi is.
I think Levi has one of the best no gear guards there is.
I'm like super best guards excited ever. For this.
Like, yeah. But I was going to say, last time I rolled with Levi, I just was chilling. I'm not chilling, but I was trying not to, like, go crazy. And then he's just like, okay, well, I'll just gradually take your back. And then he got my back. And I was, and then he kind of let me out. And I was like, no, do it. Kill me. Like, I don't.
Don't disrespect me like that.
Don't pity roll me, bro. Like, take my back and fucking finish me, cuz, like, do it. And then
he's like, but I know I could.
No, and I'm like,
oh. But you don't know that you could.
But you didn't.
No, I know I could.
I need to know. Anyway, but he's such a lovely guy. Like, I got so much respect for him because he knows his level and he rolls appropriate to his level, right? If you're not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing now is that, I don't know, I feel like those days. It was the old days where it was like more unknowns. Who's that person? They rock up, put it on everyone. Turns out they're like world elite.
Oh, I think it depends on the gym. I think it's the gym culture. From what I understand, like, you know, we spoke with Declan. Like, Declan's like, dude, if you're over 200 pounds and you walk into B team, Nicky Rod is going to fucking eat you for lunch because you're.
Yeah, but
that's where you fit
it's
in.
It's true, but you're walking into his turf, right? Like, I'm more saying, like, you wouldn't get a Nicky Rod showing up at another gym and then putting it on everyone because it would be like, hey, Nicky Rod's coming to the gym and, like, he's going to run a seminar or something. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe, but I think – I don't know Nicky personally, but I'm pretty sure everywhere he goes, he bangs with whoever he's rolling. Like, that's the guy. Like, I saw the photo with Declan and – what you should know is, like, Declan Moody is a big rig.
Yeah.
But he's actually very nice.
Definitely bigger than me.
Nice-natured guy. Yeah, just by a pinch. But when you see him with Hysam and with, you see him in the middle,
oh, yeah,
with Hysam and Nicky Rod, and you're like, oh, he's the small guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's, you know, he's in the middle and they're like, he's got his arms up like this around their shoulders and you're like, oh God, how big and fucking gargantuan must those dudes be?
Yeah.
You know, but I guess it being a competitor, Matt, you expect that there's these monsters that lurk. I guess the reason why I'm bringing up this thing about being a mat enforcer is if you train at a smaller gym, and maybe your coach is older or who knows, or maybe your coach isn't rolling that night, they need a
able-bodied.
They need someone to represent them or their teaching.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Just I guess maybe keep the peace.
It's true. Yeah, like they get someone, they're like, "Fuck, this person's going to be a handful." Hey, I'm just passing through the area. I want to come in and train tonight. I'm an ADCC competitor. Whatever. You're like, oh, shit, okay. Yeah, who's the student that they're going to go, hey, man, I want you to roll with this guy?
Because, I mean, obviously, each team has its competitors, so there might be a lightweight blue belt. So, here's an interesting story. Totally random. I told the story before. A little guy named Guy had this limp and, like, lever length discrepancy. Best guillotine ever. And this guy came in, big heavyweight black belt. They're like, oh, you should just go with Guy. But I seen Guy put everyone out with that guillotine. He put me out with a guillotine. Like, he put out Bernardo Faria with that guillotine. Like, Guy's just this kind of lightweight blue belt guy. They put this huge black belt with him. And this guy just shot in and he just went, see ya, and put him unconscious. But that was like a psychological thing. Like, oh, you went with that lightweight blue belt.
Oh.
Yeah, you got put out, bro. That's, guess you better sit off. You know, so anyway, the reason why I'm bringing it up is I think maybe it's a hangover. Like you're saying, like from old school jiu-jitsu. But perhaps if you run a smaller gym and you don't have as many higher belts, you almost need that shepherd to defend the flock if that's not you as the instructor.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And maybe if it's not even – maybe it's – I'm thinking like it's not even necessarily a protection thing, but it's like I want to make sure that everyone gets a good role.
Sure.
And so we got someone who's really good coming in. I got to make sure that they get a hard round.
Yeah.
You know, or at least, you know, so who's it going to give it to them?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I see your point. I think it's, I guess it to that end, it's necessary, right? Like yeah. you kind of want to have that person. I don't know, I do romanticize the enforcer idea. I think it's a nice rite of passage for the player to go through.
Yeah.
You know, to be that person if that's something you want to step into.
And it's not forever, right? Like it is usually just it's usually around that time of like purple brown where
yeah.
You're maybe like I don't know if you're in your competitive prime, but you're in like a high level jiu-jitsu prime and
even you don't have to be a big, strong brown belt. You might be like a lightweight, skinny, ultra-flexible purple belt who's just got the best triangle ever. And your coach knows that you can triangle anyone. So they're like, well, you know, maybe go with this big, strong bull. You triangle them. And that's there's a lesson in that. Like having someone who you know has that skill set that can just, doesn't matter who they roll, they're going to do well against, right?
Yeah.
And that's a good reflection. It's almost like a having a representative in the Senate of Jiu-Jitsu. You're like, they represent us.
Yeah.
This is our skill. You know, like, you know how each school has someone who's really good at, like the prodigy of the, not progeny, not the son of or the daughter of, it's the, this person best represents us. Like this person does our jiu-jitsu. So if you come to our school, you're kind of fighting our style.
Yeah.
You know?
It's yeah, like just our strongest ambassador.
Yeah, like a kung fu school. Like yeah. It kind of, it does throw back to that kind of Gracie challenge thing, but it's like, you think your style can defeat me? Like Wu-Tang Clan. I think, if I think about different people who I've rolled, I've been put to the mat enforcer. Like I think people perceive me as being like quite rough if I'm going to roll, but I'm not. I'm very much a...
Well, they've listened to you on the podcast. We're like, it's kill or be killed out here.
Bro.
Motherfucker, if I catch you on this, I'm fucking doing this.
Bro, match and mirror, right? You bring that fucking... You bring that big gi energy. I'm a bring it too. But if you just roll... I'm just... Yeah, I'm a match and mirror. And that's how I like to play. Like, if you're just cruising, I'm cruising. If you try and fucking rip my leg off, all right, let's do that dance, you know? Like, because I just feel it's inefficient to try to, you know, fucking blast everybody, right? But there's always someone who's like, hey, man, can we roll? You want to roll? Big fan of the podcast. It's like, all right, fuck. All right, here we go. Let's go. So... I remember going to a particular gym and they're like, oh, go with that guy over there. He's purple belt. Oh, he's pretty good. And I was like, straight. I looked at the guy. The guy's got the gnarliest cauliflower ears. He's just like tough looking human, like thick neck, really gnarly fingers. Not particularly jacked, but I'm like, no, this guy's very good at jiu-jitsu. And I was like, okay. Like you just, I think if you're somebody who is not aware that you're the threat, if you're like, man, they always put me with these fucking tough guys. Like, you're being funneled to the mat enforcer to kind of gauge you and also check you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, similar, when I went to Bernardo's gym, he put me with Bordoni when he was fucking brown belt. And he was a brown belt world champion. He's like, oh, go Giancarlo. He's pretty good. I'm like, I know who this guy is. He's from Lucas Lepre's gym. Isn't this guy a world champion? And fucking Bernardo's like, oh no, like only in the gi. And I'm like, we're in the gi, bro. Like, why are you putting me with him? I hadn't had enough time just having you fuck me up. But it's just the nature of things. So I think whether or not you are the mat enforcer or you're being put into the fire of having to roll the enforcer, like it's a reflection of skill, I think. Skill and toughness. There's like an element of like this person is tough, so even if the person they're encountering is better, they can tough it out. And I guess the reason why I wanted to talk about it is I'm wondering if it's a good or a bad thing. Is it still necessary to have a mat enforcer?
So what have you arrived at?
Well, I thought I'd pick your brain on this one, Joe. You know, you're training. Is there a mat enforcer at your gym? Are you still the enforcer?
I'm definitely not the enforcer. You're lucky if I'm there.
Coach is like, we need you tonight. Yeah. Joey. It's like,
sorry, bro. Maybe next month. I don't think there is a... I don't really know. Maybe I'm kind of not in the circuit, so I don't really know.
Okay.
But in a sense, I would say at that gym, it's almost like everyone's an enforcer.
Oh,
actually, like right. If someone visits, it's pretty... I think
it's a rough time for
that lunchtime no-gi. It's like, yeah, pretty much anyone here is gonna
mess you up.
Gonna be like a real challenge for whoever visits.
Yeah.
You know? I don't think it needs to be there, you know?
Yeah, so you think if the standard is high enough across the whole club, then...
Yeah,
what, you know.
But it definitely changes, right? I'm thinking like evening classes, which I don't go to. You got a lot more beginners, you know, a lot more people kind of just coming through and stuff. It's like, okay, I can see there where you maybe have a few people that are more towards the top that are like, they're my people, you know? So coach is like, oh, hey, visitor, yeah, roll with this cat.
Yeah.
So probably does still need to exist there. But yeah, that lunchtime no-gi session is pretty high level.
Yeah.
I
I do personally believe that if you're a smaller club, you need a champion. You need somebody who is your kind of exemplification of skill, toughness, all those things, which is not necessarily the instructor. Because what I am seeing is that instructors, you know, they might have already trained twice that day or, you know, so they're running the class. They can't always roll with everybody. So it's just a function of jiu-jitsu that they need somebody to represent them on the mat.
I would agree. Though I think, you know, if you're running a small gym, if you're hearing this, you're like, fuck, I don't have that. I think like you, if you don't have it, it's fine.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to address it.
Yeah.
You got someone coming in and you suspect that they're looking for a bit of a war.
Yeah.
You just fucking simmer that shit down. Hey, man, just so you know, super chill here. Everyone's pretty new. We don't roll really hard. I'm happy to do a round with you, but no one here is trying to kill each other. Yeah. Like you just extinguish the fire, you know?
Yeah, preventative.
Exactly. And I've had people say that to me when I've let them know I want to come and visit. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, you don't need to tell me that. But yeah. I can understand why they're saying that.
Yeah.
Because they're like, just in case, if you're looking for a war. Joey's
coming.
Yeah. Joey's going to fucking mount everyone.
Maybe.
But no, let me start in mount. I'm working on it right now. It's week on, five of six.
It's pre-roll. Hey, man, you got anything you're working on? Your mount.
Yeah.
We just start from there and we're good.
Yeah. Preach.
Preach. Anyway, for those of you out there, if you've witnessed it or if you have been subject to it, whether you are the enforcer or you've had to go to war with the enforcer for good reason or not, I think it's one of those things that we almost can't avoid it because it's like an evolution of jiu-jitsu. If your gym is big enough and you have enough or high enough standard practitioners, the team's solid. But if you're a small gym and you've only got a couple of higher belts, maybe you need that. You need that defense.
Yeah.
You need that shepherd against the wolves that can occasionally come through. All right, my friends, there it is. Mat Enforcers, are you one? Are you becoming one? Let us know in the comments.
See you. Peace.